Let's head to Bhutan tonight for a remarkable story of COVID success. The Himalayan Kingdom is one of the world's most remote nations, while also being nestled between India and China. Over the last week, they've managed a feat that is surely the envy of the world. The country has vaccinated just over 85% of its population with a second dose, dishing out more than 454,000 jabs in 1 week. Tonight, I'm joined by Bhutan's Prime Minister, Dr. Lotay Tsering. Welcome to RN Drive.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul, for giving us this opportunity.
In just under a week, you've managed to inoculate over 85% of your population. Incredibly impressive. Did you expect the rollout to go that well?
To begin with, actually, when you say 85% of the population of our country sounds like a big job, but given our context, we are a small country. We are just barely a little more than 500,000 population. So I'm not surprised. This is something we have designed, something that we did it during the first round of vaccination. Within 9 days, we could cover almost 90% of the eligible population. So this time we got about 86% of the population, but we are working on it. I think in next maybe a week's time, we will be reaching 90%.
So how did you actually manage to do it? Your health minister has publicly discussed the country's shortage of medical personnel and infrastructure. That must have made the rollout difficult.
True. I mean, that was one of our constraints. But then, as I said, smallness is our strength. And I'm sure you must be aware that we have His Majesty the King, who is revered very highly, and at whose feet we all are unconditionally united. So that is, I would say, the biggest strength that we have. In His Majesty's leadership, we all go as one team, and to fight against any infectious disease, I think unity should be the criteria number one. And then second, we must understand what we are fighting for or what we are fighting with. And COVID-19 is something that His Majesty has researched thoroughly. His Majesty talks like a virologist. His Majesty talks like an epidemiologist. And then it's our King's in-depth understanding of herd immunity and its consequences that resulted in the first round of nationwide vaccination campaign that we designed. And then this time, the second round was very easy for us because we just had to follow the template that we used 3.5 months back for the first round. So yes, I mean, it wasn't so easy because, as you said, health staff shortage was an issue. But again, we managed to get lots of non-health workers volunteering to help us. And the biggest institution that we have is a group of organization called DESUPS. DESUP is the peacekeeper in the country. So we have a big organization, again, under His Majesty's organization leadership, that we have a group of some 15, 20,000 volunteers who did all the non-medical work. They transported the vaccines across various mountains. They did the crowd gathering, crowd controlling, public informations. So it was easy for health staff to just go and do the medical part. Mm. So, health shortage was a problem, but then we had lots of non-health people doing all the non-health activities. It became easy for us. And then the other one is public confidence and cooperation that we got from public. Our public, even though not very modernly literate, but then when it comes to following certain norms, Bhutanese, I'm very proud to say that are quite obedient. So they just did exactly what we wanted them to do. So it was very easy to convince Bhutanese people.
Yeah, that's interesting because there has been a trend internationally where countries with high cases have been quicker to vaccinate than countries who've managed to keep COVID out. Australia and New Zealand are an example of that. It seems that, you know, urgency encouraged people to get protected as quickly as possible when there was a lot of COVID around. But Bhutan bucked that trend. You managed to keep COVID cases out, but also managed to convince people that it was urgent to get their jabs. And it seems that what you're saying is that the way that you did that was as a result of leadership from the top.
True. I mean, I don't need to talk much on the importance of leadership in any society or any country. That I'm sure all the listeners here and yourself will know it very well. In His Majesty the King, I think the best part is a leader must know what we are doing, and a leader must lead by example. So that's why, as we talk, His Majesty is down south, where we share open borders with India, where the pandemic is not doing very well. So His Majesty is there to talk to people, make sure that all the safeguards in place, make sure that all COVID norms are followed, make sure that everyone comes out to get vaccinated on volunteer basis. Of course, vaccination is always on volunteer basis. Mm. So I think, as you said, we all take cue from leadership. Leadership who does it, leads by example, I think has made our job very easy. And then being a medical professional background myself, with health minister being again a public health specialist, that also made our job a little easier to convince people on health related, because I had always been dealing with health. So it wasn't a very difficult job for us.
Earlier this year, though, India halted vaccine exports as cases exploded across their country. That caused a significant bump in Bhutan's strategy, forcing you to delay people's second doses. Did that development catch you by surprise?
To some extent, because when we when it was time for us to roll out the first dose, it was on a very good, generous, goodwill a gesture from Government of India, that we got all vaccine requirement from Government of India free of cost. And then we could roll out the first dose in a national campaign mode. And then Government of India always were there to help us, and they assured us that second dose will also be given in a similar platform. But unfortunately, and to everyone's surprise, India got caught up with so-called the third wave or the second wave with the Delta variant, I would say. And then things became a little out of control, and we felt bad. And His Majesty was very clear that we should not this time around ask the Government of India for any vaccine support, because they themselves needed it more than us. Mm. So we did not ask or bother Government of India for vaccine support for our second dose, because, as I said, they needed the vaccines far, far more than we did. So we reached out to the world, and then the response was beyond what we expected. Every nation that we requested for some vaccine support came in very strongly and very graciously, I would say. And yes. Then, of course, Covaxin facility facilitated all the vaccine traffic, and it worked out very well for us.
Yes, you got 500,000 Moderna doses from America via the international COVAX scheme. How beneficial was that COVAX scheme for Bhutan, given what happened with the Indian doses that you were supposed to get?
I mean, Covaxin is built on a very noble vision of reaching out to the unreached, to actually make sure that people or regions otherwise will have no access to vaccines is being facilitated very well. So we are very grateful to COVAX facility. But for Bhutan, since we set very high standards, since we wanted to achieve herd immunity, that is by vaccinating almost 80% minimum of people living in Bhutan. So even though COVAX facility was very helpful, but their, I would say, allocation would have been only up to 20-25% of the population. So, but they were very good in negotiating for us and getting international support for us. So COVAX facility was very good. At the same time, all bilateral donors, bilateral goodwill gestures that we received from individual heads of the government and those who have been friends with our monarchs and our ancestors had helped us a lot. Mm. Our forefathers who had been friends, now children are in good relation, they kept in touch, and they all put in some good words for us.
Vaccine nationalism and vaccine distribution has proven to be a divisive issue around the world. For instance, Australia has purchased 85 million jabs from Pfizer alone for our population of 25 million people. These doses are all expected to be here by 2023. And some poorer countries are questioning this. Did you predict this scenario where wealthy countries would buy up large numbers of doses and other countries would be forced to either fend for themselves or rely on donations through schemes like COVAX?
I think I can answer this in two parts. To be politically correct, I know this is all up to the individual governments and individual vaccine producers. But on a very humane note, I'm not surprised, and that is something that we all anticipated, because ultimately, end of the day, human nature will dominate what you do. So you all want to be protected first. You yourself want to be protected first. And then you would like your country and citizens of the country to be protected. And then only it will be out for others. That is being very practical, even though we expected. I don't think there's any surprises here. But at the same time, if you have realized, most of these bigger countries, bigger economies are also reaching out to the countries and people living in the regions where they could not afford themselves. So I think I have I'm a fairly mixed emotion to this. Yes, ideally it should have been equally distributed. If one country can produce more, all the people in the world should have been equally vaccinated. If it is 50%, every country should have their 50% of their population being vaccinated. But that is being too theoretical and ideal. Since that is not happening, one must know, at least by the epidemiology of the disease, that unless everyone is protected, no one is safe. That is very clear. And one nation can never live by himself or herself. So I think to share vaccines would be the most noble approach that we must take these days.
Yes. Are you concerned other countries won't be as lucky as Bhutan?
Yes, because one thing that is very sure is a sure outcome, sure protection that we need from this outbreak, COVID-19, is through vaccination. Otherwise, we have to temporarily get this non-pharmacological intervention in place. How long can we keep physical distance? How long can we keep locking down the country or regions of the country? So one time and permanent solution until we get a nasty variant up coming up is through vaccination. So we are lucky because, as I said, we are small. We have a leader who believes in science, a leader who leads us by example, His Majesty the King. But at the same time, to answer your question straight, we know there are many countries who could not afford to do it. Every country will wish to get their citizens vaccinated, but that is simply not possible because, you know, production is far, far behind demand. Mm. And then not all countries and not all governments will have approach, will have the capacity to buy or vaccinate their citizens. So I personally find it a little disturbing on this. You rightly said, if you need to cover up the whole world to have herd immunity, we need to cover up at least 75 to 80%. That is almost 5-6 billion people in the world.
Yeah.
And we know the production capacity of all the vaccine manufacturing companies in the world put together will hardly produce a billion or two a year. So we need about 5-6 years to cover up the whole population and have herd immunity. That is simply not possible. So some regions, some societies, some countries will still be left behind. And as I said, I feel very bad for that.
Well, you have 85% of your country is inoculated. You obviously have to be happy with that level of protection for your population, but you're maintaining the tight border controls you've always had. Do you feel that Bhutan is safe now as a result of that level of inoculation?
No. Absolutely no. No, for many reasons. Number one, of course, to correct our conversation, we have vaccinated almost about 85% of our eligible population. That is only about 65% of our total population of the country. And Bhutan is a very young population. Our median age is only about 25.5. So we need to vaccinate children. And very soon we will try to cover up 12 to 17 year olds. And then we can have 85% or maybe very close to 85% of people living in the country being vaccinated, which what we call as herd immunity. But on safety, I'm a little disappointed with many countries or governments in the world where after vaccination, they are talking about relaxing certain COVID norms, which I personally feel is a bit too early to decide on that. One, we need to have herd immunity, that is almost about 80-85% of people living in that country be protected through vaccination, which, as we all know, not many bigger countries have that coverage yet. Smaller countries do, but not the bigger ones. Number two, we need to have herd immunity of the global citizens before COVID-19 ceases to be a public health hazard. And number three, you know, as the disease transmission goes a little wild, a little uncontrolled, as the outbreak comes frequently, viral variant will also come more frequently. As we are fighting Delta variant, we know there are pockets of the world where Lambda variant is coming up. His Majesty has already started researching on Lambda variant, the aggressiveness of Lambda variant, contagiousness of Lambda variant, efficacy of the existing vaccines in practice on Lambda variant. Will Lambda variant have immune escape or not? Those things are already there in public domain. So how can we feel safe if suddenly a variant that comes up has immune escape, if the vaccination that we got do not cover the upcoming variant? So I think we have to go very slow on it. I think non-pharmacological interventions will have to keep on it. We have to sacrifice our livelihood a bit, have patience with this pandemic a bit. Then only I think we can be sure of saving lives. Because maybe not elsewhere, but in Bhutan, we have given utmost priority to saving lives first. That's why we have pulled in all our resources to save the lives of our individuals and then sustain their livelihood to the minimum. Because we know that COVID-19 will clear off one day. And if we are alive, we can always, our economy is small, we can always revive it again. But if COVID-19 creates havoc in the community, then we are losing both life as well as livelihood.
Yeah.
Economy damage is in we cannot escape from that. So in that way, we are very sure that we, even though we'll have a lot of immune protection, but we cannot let our guards down. We have to stay vigilant. We have to keep a very, very close, sharp look on the emergence of new variants. Let's see whether the new variants will stop emerging or not.
Just a quick one before we go. Bhutan's health minister is the newly elected president of the World Health Assembly, the forum governing the World Health Organization. What are you hoping Bhutan will bring to global health strategy?
Overall, that's what we have talked about. But as you can guess, we are a small country. We are a powerless country, I would say, technologically, economically, in every sense. But our wish would be we dwell our daily lives on the principles of gross national happiness. We govern based on the principles and philosophy of gross national happiness. And now I personally feel this pandemic has taught all of us, if you have not learned a lesson until now, pandemic probably taught us a good lesson that focusing on material growth as well as wealth may not pay off that much. To pay attention to your well-being, peace and harmony probably should take a little different approach. And then investing in the health of the citizens of a country should be of utmost priority. Then only all economic activities and other social activities can hang around health activities. So any country that has invested a lot in health would probably be benefiting now as we fight the pandemic. And in future, you know, pandemic is going to come, keep coming rather. The nomenclature of the pandemic COVID-19 is very clear. We are fighting COVID-19 caused by SARS-CoV-2. We really don't know where SARS-CoV-3 is getting cooked. That might bring about another pandemic or continuation of this pandemic. So given that scenario, knowing how this infectious disease evolved, I think henceforth going forward, we must pay a lot of attention on public health. And that would be the message that Bhutan would be driving through World Health Assembly through our chairmanship for the next 1 year.
Yeah. Prime Minister, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul, for giving us the opportunity.
Prime Minister of Bhutan, Dr. Lotte Tsering.